Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
Welcome back to the realm of heroes and monsters Storytime podcast with me, A.P. Fuchs, your host. I'm a writer, artist, illustrator from Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is, if you look on a map, we're smack dab in the middle of North America. I mean, if you take the entire landmass of North America, including way up north, and Winnipeg is basically right in the middle. So it's pretty cool that way. But the downside, of course, is the ocean is more or less equidistant to either side, and it's a really long drive to get there. We're talking like 3.5 to 4 days, depending on how many pit stops you take. So yeah, that's the only downside. I'm like in the middle of the prairies, flat land, flat grass, flat everything, because it is called the prairies here in Canada. They call these provinces the prairies for a reason. It's flat, man. You could roll a pencil from Manitoba all the way across the land, across to Saskatchewan if you wanted to, and it wouldn't break a beat. But anyway, welcome to the show. This is a cool show, I think, this one. We got a cool story coming up. We're doing werewolves. And not only werewolves, but werewolves during World War II. So I want you guys to tune in for that one, because that's a fun, exciting story that's going to come up. And then also, too, very, very critically, and I mentioned this in the, I'm going to mention this in the story behind the story portion as well, but please ensure to stay back for after the credits, because there's an incredibly important artist slash writer PSA that I did. I did it as an AuthorTube video, but I'm going to share the audio here with you as well, because it is super important that we establish now, as creators, that we come together and make a point regarding AI creation of artwork and writing. Okay? In the end, at the way the current AI thing functions in terms of how it assembles things, it's 100% theft. There's absolutely no way to look at it any other differently. So anyway, students, stay in tune for after the podcast, because you're going to hear about why it is theft, why it is stealing, and why it is unacceptable. Okay? So I'm a little bit pumped up about that one too. I hope you get riled up about it, because I want you to speak out as well. Share this podcast, share what you can regarding the issue, because if you don't speak now, it's going to be too late. But in the meantime, let's go a bit lighter now. And I want you to sit back, relax, sip your coffee, have your beer, whatever you're doing when you're listening to this, and enjoy a story about werewolves in World War II. World War II. By the time you ate your millionth canned bean, your body did all kinds of things, not the least of which was turn on your own father for a meal. At least, that's what Sergeant Dick Channer told himself when he awoke that terrible morning, only to find his dad, the great General Channer, lying dead at his feet in a pool of blood and stringy flesh. It was cold down here in the bunker, despite it being completely closed in, but, Dick supposed, it was supposed to be cold down here. It was a bomb shelter, after all, nothing but metal walls backed by concrete. Nothing but metal shelves with old canned food that might as well be bricks of concrete. Nothing but... Dick glanced at his feet and then at his father's corpse. "Oh, Dad, I'm sorry," he said. "Why did you drag us down here? If you didn't, you'd still be alive." He shook his head, snapping himself out of it. "If you didn't rip his guts out, he'd still be alive. It's your fault. It's all your fault." Was it madness? It was hard to tell. Dick had lost count as to how long he and his father had been down here. His platoon had been surrounded by German tanks, foot soldiers, planes circling high overhead, and it was the planes that were the problem. The moment the bombs dropped, those in Dick's platoon scattered for their lives. A moment later, the ground shook as half of it was blown to hell and body parts flew in the air. Dick and his father had made underground safely. So far as they knew, so no one else did. But details were scant down here. The radio stopped working after the first day. Nothing but static. By Dick's estimate, he and his father had been down here for at least a month. His dad had said something about not wanting to go back up and for them to take their time due to the radiation that was probably floating around above. Dick had been fine with that. Better safe than sorry. His father said they would indeed be safe. Not only were these walls lined with concrete, they were also lined with lead. Any radiation wouldn't have a prayer of penetrating it. He also said this model of bunker was the most secure of its kind. The heavy steel door at the top of the stairs leading to the surface had a special combination lock on it, one so complex, his father said, that only senior officers received the combination. The idea being such a secure location was for the brass only. But where the government gets off dictating that, I don't know, his dad also said. A life's a life, and ranks are only as good as the clothes they're attached to. It's the man beneath the uniform that establishes the rank. But policy was policy, and that was it. The general's body already began to stink. Dick only wished he knew how long his father had been dead. There was no place to bury him. There was no way out. 4 days later, Dick was starving. His father's body lay in the corner, a canvas tarp tossed over it. The air smelled of rot, but Dick suspected to him it smelled worse than it actually was. Something about knowing it was his father's body added to it. His stomach growled. The canned food was gone. The only thing he had was water from a below-ground well. But water wasn't filling, and there were limits as to how much a person could drink at any one time. I want to die, he thought. And something else within, more feeling than thought, said, survive. Dick glanced over at his father's body. It lay there beneath the tarp, all snug and warm. Preserved. Not preserved, he said. Decaying. Preserved. Shut up. The feeling. No. Him. Quiet. The feeling. You be quiet. Him. Who are you? The feeling. Survive. The smell began to dissipate. His stomach rumbled. The blood didn't taste metallic, not like living blood. The stuff was more jello-like, like cranberry sauce, but not sweet, only bland. It was dark, too, oxygen having not penetrated it in a long time. But it was good. His father's flesh was tough, jerky-like, with a bit of a kick to it. Dick didn't like the fact it was cold, but he didn't mind either. The cold meat wasn't as offensive as he thought it might have been. Where that thought came from, he didn't know. Another feeling, yet feeling, wasn't even the right word either. It was something different, deeper, perhaps even unknown. What's happened to me? He whispered. Tears suddenly gushed from his eyes, and each word was forced out through pursed, torment-ridden lips. He was my father. My father. Dad. Oh, Dad. Dad, oh, Dad. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I was dying, and I... He swallowed a lump in his throat. He grimaced when he acknowledged that the lump was a chunk of his dad's flesh, a piece from just below the elbow. Facing his hands, Dick cried out for hell to open up beneath him and take him. Take him to where he deserved. Dad. 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 Survive. 1 week later, Dick sat huddled in the corner of the bunker. His father's body was a mere skeleton now amidst a few piles of dry fat deposits and unmentionables he couldn't bring himself to eat. The torment of what he'd done had left and was now just replaced with countless mantras of excuses and justifications and anything else he could think of to absolve himself of his crime. One thought prevailed, however, his dad giving him that shiny red bike at Christmas. Boys always loved shiny red bikes for some reason, and Dick was proud he was no exception. He was 7 and had gotten off training wheels much later than the other kids. His parents hadn't any money to buy him a proper two-wheeler, his other bike having been a hand-me-down from his cousin, a girl. The bike was pink, originally, and Dick's father had smudged out the color with shoe polish. Only temporary, he said. That temporary had become 3 years. But Christmas came. So had Santa. So had that big old present by the tree. One that, despite the brown paper covering it, was obviously a brand new bike. Dick had been in the middle of opening it when his parents came down the stairs. At first, his father's eyes went stone cold, and Dick thought for sure Christmas was over. Then a big smile lit up his old man's face, and Dick proceeded to unwrap the huge present. It was a gorgeous, shiny red bike with chrome spikes and black handles. He hugged his father first and held him tight for several minutes before letting go. At 7, he could never imagine the next time he held his father so tight was when the old guy would be laying in his arms, squeezed up against his mouth, teeth tearing out chunks from the soft flesh around his neck. Another week passed. Dick's stomach growled, but worse, it felt like it was coming up underneath his rib cage and invading his lungs, as if somehow his whole insides were being rearranged. "I can't go on like this," he said. "I just can't." Survive. There was that thought, that feeling, again. "I am surviving," he whispered. "Barely. Water. That's it. Dad's dead end." He picked up one of his father's bones from the floor and nibbled at it. He wanted so badly to set it back down, but instead found himself pressing its pointy tip further in between the gap of two bottom teeth. The generator that had been on since he arrived down here had broken down. There was some kind of quake above, and then darkness. Now, he sat in the shadows, his eyes more adjusted to the dark than expected, and there was something else, something in the air. Smells. That chalky scent of the concrete, the clean yet tangy smell of the wood, the sharpness of metal, the almost dark smell of the lead. They were all there, all of them perfectly layered, strongest to weakest. Dick wondered what was happening above. The quake that knocked out the power indicated a battle was still going on, and it wasn't vacant above ground due to radiation like his father thought. He still couldn't figure out what happened to him down here, and madness seemed too easy an excuse. Even desperation. Who eats their own father and lives to tell about it? More specifically, who willingly eats their own father? No one, except him. Something happened. Something strange. Something. A faint light appeared in the corner of the room, its nucleus concentrated in what looked to be the far corner, right near the roofline. Dick got up and stood before it. It was white. Beautiful. He thought perhaps he was finally dying, and through some mistake in the divine judgment book, he was actually on his way to heaven. Yet his feet remained planted on the ground, his body still firmly covered in his uniform. The light. With each passing minute, it slowly grew brighter, more focused, until it came forth as a strong ray into the room. Moonlight. His heart rose in his chest. His mind suddenly grew clear. Even down here there was mercy, a chance to experience the beauty of a full moon. The light from above must have found its way through a fissure in the earth and into a crack in the shelter. Dick stared at the light, its whiteness reminding him of snow at Christmas. The bittersweet memory of the bright red bike flooded his mind soon after. He glanced down to the pile of bones that was once his father. A sharp pang struck his heart, and grief took over. He reached for the light. "Take me with you. Get me out of here. Take me." He rolled his fingers around in the beam. Then fire ran through him. Immediately, all the muscles and tendons in his hands locked, everything losing its elasticity. His bones ached, then throbbed, the pain sending tremors through every one of his body. His whole hand flashed white, as if the moonbeam had leapt from the air and settled on his skin. Soon a bright white burst lit up beneath the fabric of his uniform. His arms, then his body, flashed like a light bulb on the fritz. Right after, his lower back locked, and his spine went from straight to arced in a split second, forcing him forward so deep he thought he'd kiss his knees. His jaw, everything was locked, like someone had strung a coat hanger through the bone, forbidding any movement. Then his jawbone began to pull away from his face as invisible fingers tugged and tugged. Snap. Crack. Click. Dick wanted to howl with each painful twitch of the bone, but instead could only form his mouth into a feeble upside-down U-shape where sound could leak out. Teeth throbbing for more than lack of care, they began to expand inside his mouth, and soon sharps, tips, kissed the top of his tongue. His skin ignited again, this time each pore feeling as if he was sweating liquid fire. Something, tiny somethings, pushed their way through his skin, each slip of whatever it was like a series of paper cuts as they sliced through. Bones broke inside. Dick released a muffled cry behind a set of teeth and mouth that were still elongating and rearranging themselves. The world went black, then a second later went red, then a moment after that black and white, like the whole room had become the front page of the newspaper. Little dots of color peppered the room, but did not prevail like before. His gut ran up into his throat, then back down again. His heart. For a second it seemed to stop, but now had resumed, this time more frantic, like rage had touched it. Each shot of the blood had pumped up more and more energy into his limbs. Firmness gripped every muscle. Power. The pain began to ease. Dick was able to straighten, but only a little. Then a blast of agony swept through him as nails grew from his fingertips and toes and shot into the air and through his boot. Finally, he howled. Feeling surged through him. Thought was there, but somehow seemed behind him, in a way, hiding somewhere in his mind that was accessible, but also forgettable. He had to get out. This tiny 10x20 room suddenly seemed to grow smaller with each passing instant. The door was sealed. He didn't know how he knew, but he did. Dick tore his shirt away, a fur-covered chest filled with muscles, finally able to fully expand and contract with each powerful breath. He charged the door with everything he had. His body slammed into it with a metallic boom. Suddenly limp, he fell back down the short flight of steps to the cold cement floor. Claws scraped on concrete as he scrambled to get back up. He tried again. Blong, again. Blong, again. Blong! The door didn't budge. Growling, he rushed to his feet and bounded toward the sliver of moonlight poking into the room. He sniffed it, his black nose testing its scent. It seemed cool, in a way, almost fresh, like the moonbeam was his lifeline. Yet even if it wasn't, he'd make it one. Dick scrambled up to the corner of the room, thick, heavy paws padding on the metal shelving, shuffling that stuff to the corner. It creaked and groaned when his tremendous weight settled upon it. The light. Fresh. Cool. Freedom. Blood coated his claws, the surrounding fur gray and dusty with bits of cement. He was almost through. The light. It meant that this place wasn't as secure as he once thought. It meant there was the possibility of getting out of here. It meant change. Finally. Sweet. Then it hit him. Change was what brought this on. It was change that killed his father. The light. Something to do with the light. Something had changed. Dick dug furiously, pulling down chunks of concrete. His claws struck something hard, something painfully hard. There was something else on the other side of the cement, some other material encasing this place. He dug his fingers in the hole where the light poured forth, cutting off the moonbeam. The room went dark. Dick gripped his muscled fingers against the... There was a word for it. Yes, it was called lead. He gripped as much of it as he could and pulled. 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 The stuff groaned from the pressure and began to move. Reveling in this awesome new strength, Dick pulled again, and again, and again. No longer did his fingers block the light. Dirt rained upon his snouted face as he dug toward the surface. Baptism. Dick burst through the earth's surface, splashing up dirt and grass. He sniffed the smoke hanging thick on the air, remnants of explosives. He howled, both in victory and at the glorious sight of the moon high above. A part of him had expected there to be nothing up here, and though there was nothing, there was still something. Sound, all over. In the distance, bombs whistled through the air before hitting the earth with a deafening boom. Machine guns rattled. Men screamed. Others growled. Dick dropped to all fours and galloped into the smoke, its gray combined with his new black and white vision making it difficult to see. No matter. His ultra-sharp hearing and newfound sense of smell made navigating through it even easier than using his eyes. The back of his brain came to the fore. Human. Gunshots fired. A man screamed after something growled. Dad was wrong, he thought. The war wasn't over. It only changed. So much time. Wasted. Lost. He stopped. Dad's dead. A growl rumbled in his throat, then escaped his lips so loud it sounded cleared right through his head, shaking away the awful regret from taking his father's life. The smoke was everywhere. Shadows flittered this way and that on the other side of it. Some seemed to be of men running from something. Others rode close to the ground, four legs tearing across the earth like a strong wind. Wolves. It finally hit him, then. Dick knew what he had become, but didn't understand how. Once more, that which was Dick drifted to the back of his mind, and the feeling came forth. A low rumble gurgling in his throat, he tore off into the smoke, his nose ever active, searching for the sweet smell of blood. Time lost its meaning. Now there were only moments and sensations. The hard earth beneath his paws in one piece, the crunchy grass in others. There was no word to describe the glorious red nectar when he finally smelled it. only a feeling. Warmth. It smelled warm. Alive. Dick banked to the right, and almost immediately a shadow appeared against the smoke. Its legs slowly moved across the ground, and in its hands it held some kind of rod. The shadow smelled like his father, along with the scent of metal. The sharp tang of sweat and fear was palpable on the air. Dick slowed, then stopped, bowing just behind a veil of smoke, ready to pounce. The shadow took a step closer, and he jumped. Ripping through the army fatigues with his teeth had been easy. Though tough fabric was more chewy than anything else, it tasted dry. It was the prize beneath, that which he now chewed, that filled his mouth and throat with euphoria. Dick was halfway, he knew, his mind caught somewhere between man and beast. He knew full well what he was doing, and though a more civil side of him urged him to stop, he just continued chewing, shoving his snout deep into the man's abdomen and pulling out string after string of gluey flesh and raw intestine. Dick put a paw on the man's chest so he could dig in deeper and get at what appeared to be the good stuff just above the man's guts. The man's ribs cracked as he put his weight on his paw. Dick pulled and chewed and flung the meat side to side, reveling in the wet, splashy sounds it made each time it slapped against the sides of his snout, the warm spray of blood dotting his fur and the skin beneath it. He stepped further up the man's body and dove in at the neck. One pull, and the man's trachea was free. The smell of blood on the air changed, and something new was present. Dick gobbled up the rest of the neck, then spun around, only to be greeted by another wolf. This one smelled different than him. A moment later, he realized it was female. A high-pitched whistle sounded overhead, followed by a low boom. The ground shook. Something else rat-a-tat-tatted in the distance. The female drew close. Dick growled. She stopped, then inched forward, each planting of her paw timed and precise. She smelled so, so good. Never taking her eyes off his, she dipped her head and nibbled at the fallen soldier's thigh. Dick let her, and for the second, the human part of him wondered what her name was. Could she talk? Could he talk? He growled and barked. No, he thought. His heart pumped harder at the idea he could hear his words inside his head but not say them. He tried again. Same thing. The female wolf tore into the man's legs, biting clean through to the ground beneath. Another couple bites and she tore the leg free. She lied down and placed one paw over the leg's knee and got to work. Dick backed up a step, then bit at the man's face. His eyes never left the other wolf. When all that was left of the soldier was torn fabric, bone, and a few hunks of meat, Dick patted around the body a few times, his paws splashing against the blood-soaked ground. The female seemed to watch him in approval. Another of their kind howled in the distance. The female looked at him as if asking if he was coming. Dick glanced back in the direction of the bunker, his human side longing for his father and fearing leaving that life behind him. Then the feeling returned. He trotted up to her, sniffed her mouth, and still smelled the blood on her breath. His heart sped, and even after the meal, he had just stomached. Oh, he just yearned for more. She moved up ahead, and he followed. Soon, the ground began to rise, so he adjusted his speed to match the steady incline of the hill they were on, and also to keep up with her. Yet he was sure to remain just a little bit behind. Something about her said she should be in charge. At the top of the hill, there were others, a row of wolves as far as the eye could see to either side. The smoke was also much thinner up here, making it easier to see into the valley below. And there, at the bottom of the hill, was a camp swarming with men in green uniforms. Dick's female companion howled, and every wolf immediately darted down the hill, eyes fixed forward, growling and barking. It was time to feast. Dick decided to see if there were any bunkers. Perhaps one would contain someone who looked like his father.
Welcome to Story Behind the Story. So we got ourselves here a good old school anthology. It's called Wolves of War, and that's where my story World War II came from. It was edited by my friend Eric S. Brown, who I collaborated on regarding editing the Bigfoot Terror Tales anthologies, volumes 1 and 2. Check those out. They're really good. But yeah, this was done by Library of Horror Press. I don't think they're around anymore. But, you know, this was back in the day when, like, small presses were a thing, like, regularly a thing. Like, it was small presses, and then a pile of writers would go under them. I mean, and now publishing houses are everywhere because of the whole digital publishing thing, but back in the day, that wasn't like that. It was, like, getting accepted into a small press publication or a medium press publication was a huge deal. It was a big deal at the time. And, yeah, so I was really thankful that my story got into this book. And what's even cooler, and, you know, I'll be honest, I haven't looked at it in a while, my story was the first one. And there's, I won't get into why, but if you're an editor of anthologies, you know the reason why stories, certain stories are put in the front. And it's not a point to toot my horn, it's just simply to say it's a flattering thing that the editor did. It was something I had no control over. But yeah, World War II is a huge thing in my family history. It's an awful event that occurred. I mean, utterly terrible on so many levels. And, you know, my family back ancestral-wise was affected by it. Strongly, it was a massive turning point in their lives. The whole world that they knew and life that they knew back in Germany was totally turned upside down, inside out and backwards, and a bunch of horror followed. And yeah, I've heard stories. I don't share them too often. I don't know too many of them as well. My grandfather who served, he after the fact, he didn't speak about it. I don't know what he did for coping or else, you know, other things. He wasn't a drinker, he wasn't a drug user, nothing like that. He did like to have the occasional cigarette, but outside of that, there was nothing that he did unhealthy-wise to cope in terms of physical imbibement of something. But I guess at some point, you know, maybe he just came to peace with, you know, it happened, it was awful, it was terrible, but he maybe came to a point of acceptance where, like, you know what, at least you survived, and now you have a family to celebrate, and that's all good. So I wanted to create a story in the World War II sort of era segment portion, and we also do the werewolf thing. And for me, I remember the particular joy of this story in terms of writing was the transformation. You know, I mean, there's so many versions of how a person transfers into a werewolf. And part of it too is what kind of werewolf, right? Because like some is like human to like literal wolf form, but maybe the wolf is bigger. But another is like the monster version, right? Where you're kind of on the hind legs, hunched over, the claws and the teeth and all that stuff, right? So in this case, yeah, I kind of gave him a mix of the of both, sort of the stand-up version and the all fours version. But I wanted to enhance, you know, like that curve in the spine and like what it felt like for all those hairs to like suddenly come out of like your skin and that sort of stuff. Like the transformation, like, you know, I'm a superhero fan, as you all know, and like it's cool when you see a superhero transform into the hero, right? Secret identity into the hero identity. And it's the same thing with monsters, right? Like, you know, like in this case, turning into a werewolf. It's awesome, like the transformation, how different parts change and how the eyes change and how the mouth changes and the teeth change. And it's just, I don't know, it's just a really cool thing. Maybe it's something, I don't know why I'm drawn to it, but it is a thing for me and I really like it. So like in my fiction, when I have a chance to do some sort of transformation segment or paragraph or two or whatever, I try to make it cool and exciting because it's just a fun thing for me. But yeah, other than that, I just simply wanted to tell just a straightforward werewolf story, but also something with a bit of heart. Hence the whole thing with Dick and his father, right? Like, obviously, Dick got desperate and went mad and did something terrible. But at the same time, maybe it wasn't him because he talked about that feeling, right? So maybe it was the inner wolf that drove him to do it prior to the official transformation by moonlight, you know? So it's that whole thing with, like, you know, struggle of the heart. And when you're dealing in a monster scenario, then you're definitely struggling with the heart because the monster side obviously wants to kill and destroy and blood and all this. Whereas, you know, if you're a decent human being on the other side of things, you're going to definitely wrestle with that, right? So, yeah, I just wanted to demonstrate that as well and hopefully give the story more than just action and blood and guts, you know, because I think when it comes to any story, and I'll kind of sum it up with this and end with this, is that, you know, it's fine to have the eye candy. It's fine to, you know, we were talking to see movies, for example, or even books, you know, where it's just like fluff, right? It's just like action and whatever. But if you could take those elements, those fun, exciting elements, and put something underneath it, something a little bit weightier, something with a bit of girth, like a mattress almost, like a heavy-duty, good mattress, and to really like kind of prop that exciting stuff up, it just enhances the story. Whether I succeeded with that with World War II or not, I don't know. But I'll leave that to you to decide. But in the meantime, yeah, that's my story behind the story. I just wanted to do a werewolf story, but I wanted to make it, you know, something with a bit of oomph to it as opposed to just blood and guts and that's it. Anyway, please do stay around for after the credits. There is an extraordinarily important message that needs to be shared, and I ask kindly too that if you can share this podcast, share the video that the audio is from, anything you can do to spread the important message to come is very important, because you know what? AI writing and AI art is stealing. End of story. Go listen. Quick disclaimer. One, this video is meant for sharing, so by all means, share. Two, the article I'm going to read is going to be in the description and a link to the original on the blog. And you are more than welcome to use the text in its entirety and put it wherever you like on the internet, as long as you include my name and a link to the either this video or the original article. Okay, that's the only two conditions. Otherwise, have at it, go crazy, spread the word, because this is important. All right, listen, bottom line. AI writing and art is stealing. End of story. Okay? I'm going to give it to you straight, point blank, full-blown black and white, so there's no miscommunication. The publishing industry was headed toward danger about a decade ago when the digital publishing boom hit. I said back then it would lead to problems, and it was proven right. Now we're at the precipice of a giant problem, and it's due to the use of AI for writing and art. To keep it simple, how AI produces a work of art or a written piece. In short, it scours the internet for the information you provided it by answering a few prompting questions in the AI generator, and then the AI machine spits out what you asked for. It goes and roams the internet and takes a bit from column A, a bit from column B, some more from column C, and so on, and then brings back to you what it found based on what you told it to create in a mix that it calls writing and art. Okay, look. There's only one way to look at this. Theft. Plagiarism. Stealing. It's breach of copyright, perhaps even trademark. And for what? Money? That is not a valid excuse. This is no different than me being a good thief. A smart thief doesn't go and try and knock over a bank for a big payday. They typically also don't go for obvious outlets like a jewelry store for the same thing. They have other ways. Right? A smart thief goes to their friend's house and steals a few bucks, then heads to their other friend's for that silver bracelet they know their friend has and is meant for pawning off later. They go to Aunt Jane's and pocket a few small valuables, maybe some change lying around. In the end, the thief has a pile of stolen items from various places, which then gets turned to whatever they want. Cash, something to barter with, something to feed an addiction, whatever. The point is, they stole. If a cop was watching you when you did this, you'd bet he'd be getting a stern talking to, never mind any potential consequences, okay? AI is no different than the above example. If you're a writer or an artist using AI, you are a thief and a disgrace to the industry and to the craft. End of story. There is no discussion, because there's no other way to look at it. Artists and writers are to create from the heart, create from the mind, and create through actual effort and special thought to produce what they're making. Cheating artists use technology to do the things they can't because they're inept at actually doing the work themselves. Sure, AI's gathering of info is a bit from here, a bit from there, all tiny amounts to make the big item at the end. But guess what? A small theft is just as bad as a big one. Stealing a pack of gum at a 7-Eleven makes you just as much of a thief as the guy who broke into a family's house with a gun and forced them to fork over their valuables. A court of law would, of course, weigh each situation differently, but the underlying verdict would remain the same. Stealing. This is like selling prints at a con with a character you don't own. It's irrelevant if it's your drawing. If you don't own the character and you drew a picture and are asking money for it, you're ripping people off. And you're ripping off the people who own the character. Further, those of you who are standing by and not saying anything, guess what? You're just as guilty. See, there's this thing with stealing called abetting. If you're with your friend or anyone else, and you see them pocket something that doesn't belong to them, and they get caught, and it's found out that you saw but didn't alert anybody, you're just as guilty for not voicing the crime. Your punishment might be lighter, but either way, you're just as bad because you're not saying anything aided the crime. It helped the bad guy out. Stop stealing. Create your own stuff. Pay the price of learning your craft and getting good at it instead of cheating your way to where you want to go with the almighty dollar being the end game. Or simple laziness or selfishness. Pick your negative trait. Okay, look, let's be very clear on this point. Art is not about money. That's a side benefit. Art is about you and your heart, your mind, and your soul. Art is about expressing those things authentically through your mediums of choice. Art is not a computer thieving one-sentence ideas from someone else's art studio. Worse, if you're passing your AI stuff off as your own, or even if you have an AI disclaimer but are in the end asking money for the stuff you stole, guess who you're also ripping off? Your audience, your readers, the very precious people who should be treated with dignity and respect, not shame and disrespect by giving them something you didn't make and pretending you did. Listen, I'm going to let you in on a little secret, but it's going to require you to step up, all right? Yeah, actual effort, that needs to be done. But also this, artists and writers control this industry, not the other way around. Not one company, not two, not even several. Creators are led to believe the industry is in the corporation's control. But guess what? The industry is based on what we produce. Therefore, as producers, the control is in our hands. If we stop being complacent, stop taking the easy way out, stop dumping all our efforts promoting one platform, and this list goes on, things could change. But it needs to be a group effort. My single voice on the topic is like shouting to the front man at a blaring rock concert. They're not going to hear me. But if the crowd shouted at them together, you bet there'd be a reaction. Maybe even a pause in performance. And maybe even some back and forth discussion. Things happen at concerts. This is common knowledge. Same deal applies here. Speak up. Step up. Don't use AI. Be yourself. Do your thing. Be patient. Take your time, like every other writer and artist before you. Let yourself grow in your craft so that whatever you produce is genuinely from you and not from anyone or anything else. That's a real artist. That's a real writer. Anything less, and you're not either of those. You could pretend to be, but beneath the facade, if you're using AI, you're no better than a thief, and nobody likes a thief. As for me, and many I know, no, we won't be reading your work. We won't even be looking at your art. And you will definitely not get a sale out of us. Forget that. Stop stealing. You're better than that. Step up. Speak up. Make the effort. Otherwise, if we don't act together, every single one of us will be screwed. Okay, listen. I've been at this stuff for 25 years, okay? I'm not an idiot, nor am I naive when it comes to this business. I've done deals in New York, I've published independently, even back when it was sneered at and you were a laughingstock in the business and even amongst your peers. I've sold stories and articles and a pile of other stuff to various publications via my own artistic time put in efforts. I've run my own publishing house. I've negotiated between myself, an agent, and Simon & Schuster. The list goes on and on. The only point I'm making here is simply to answer this one question. What do you know? Who are you? Well, that's who I am, okay? I have experience. I predicted piss-poor sales for authors after the digital publishing boom is completely right. and now I predict sales to become near non-existence once AI floods the market from thieves who are only after a payday. And, sadly, there is no artistic integrity in some folks. They just want money. Greed is poison. Get a handle on it before it gets a handle on you. If you need an example of what greed can do, you don't have to look further than out your front door. Got it? Grow up. Put in the time, put in the work, be the real deal. This world is full of phonies and unreliable people. Think hard. Is that who you want to be? A crook? A demonstrable crook? Don't be a thief. I don't care if you're one fish in the pond doing it. I don't care if there are several of you doing it. I quit the publishing business a long time ago and opted to make books instead for a reason, and I'm still outside the biz in that context. And I will stay in that arena for the rest of my creative career because I refuse to swim with thieves. Stop it. Speak up. Let's work together instead and turn this thing around before it's too late. And mark my words, soon it will be too late.